You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome to episode 62 of the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, March 11th, 2009. Your digital fingerprint. It is time again for the Wells Tech Podcast. This is episode 62, and once again, at my side, kind of, my virtual side, Sally Draper from Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. I had to skate to work this morning. We're covered in ice here in Sleepy Eye.
Is that right? Skating from your kitchen to your office, was it?
Yeah, it was rough. My kids don't have school, so that's important to them. Anyway.
Are they off because of spring break or because of the weather?
Because of the weather, yet again. So right now we're in a two-hour delay, but I'm expecting them to call the whole thing off real soon. So.
Yikes.
Yeah, wow, it was a rough morning.
It has been one of those winters I know around here. They're wondering where to add all these days. They're going to be in school in July at this point. So
yeah, I think so.
It's a bummer. Well, we are warm and ready to have another great podcast. I can't believe we're already at the episode 62. We've done 62 of these things, and we still have things to talk about.
Yep, not running out of things to talk about. And a lot of that has to do with our great Wells Tech community. I'm really excited to see the community really starting to gel now and talk with each other and share ideas. And we're all learning so much from each other. And I guess that's a great lead-in to say that people should continue to contribute. And there's lots of ways to do that. If you visit our show notes website at wellstech.wells.net, you'll find all those ways. You can send us email. You can leave comments. You can send us voicemail. We'd love to hear your voice on the show. That voicemail number is 414-375-2334, and there's loads of other ways, so check out the website for all of that.
And a great segue to our topic of the day, which is the fourth chapter of a continuing book that we're going through with our audience. Here Comes Everybody, The Power of Organizing Without Organizations by Clay Shirky. And today we're going to talk about the phenomenon of what he calls publish then filter, kind of the shift in the publishing industry where publishing was only in the hands of the few, and they, the editors and such, filtered that content before you and I, Sally, got to read it. Now it's kind of flipped. You and I are the publishers, and everybody else has to filter. So a very interesting concept, and ties in nicely with the Wells Tech community as well. If you go to our Facebook page, or even if you go to our Wells Tech page, all of our listeners have the ability to publish, right?
That's right. And, you know, there's a lot of things to be said for self-publishing or whatever. It certainly gives you a lot of power and makes you feel like you're part of the community, but it's also an amateur effort, whereas before everything was a lot more on a professional level. Now it's kind of like anything goes, and so you do have to put those filters in place, but it's kind of after the fact. You're getting bombarded with all this information, and you have to pick and choose to be selective in that process.
Absolutely, and there's a good and a bad side to that. I remember a blog post, I'd have to think back, that was probably last fall. I was going to a number of conferences, and one of the speakers really kind of etched in my mind the fact, again, that when you're publishing, you are what I called etching yourself on the internet. You're making your mark, and what you write there tells the world who you are. And what you write there also is somewhat permanent. So you have to think about what you're writing and how you're representing yourself on the internet. So if you're blogging, if you have a Facebook account, a MySpace account, if you're putting stuff on Flickr, if you're tweeting on Twitter, all of those things are saying something about you, and all of those things kind of make up who your virtual or your digital persona is, and that can be for good or for, you know, maybe not evil, but you know, it represents you in a certain way to the rest of the world, certainly to your friends, and that's really the point of this chapter in Here Comes Everybody, is that, you know, even though these things are, you know, these things called blogs or social networks are maybe meant mostly for a close circle of friends to read, that's not all who's reading them.
That's right. Sometimes fame happens in the process. Sometimes right. Something little that gets put out there without thinking turns into something really big. And I think we've all seen examples of this, the viral nature of the internet. And so, you know, choose your words carefully. Don't be afraid to engage. But know that even things that you think is potentially a one-to-one communication or a one-to-a-very-few communication has the ability to sprout legs and to take off from there and reach a lot of people, to have very long-lasting life on the internet, so that it might be referenced a long time into the future. And, you know, just always be choosing your words carefully.
Mm-hmm. The chapter that we're discussing here focuses a lot on what's called user-generated content. And I think that definition has shifted over the past year or two, where user-generated content was simply the ability for people to contribute to websites, and ultimately the websites became, you know, what was contributed by a particular user or set of users. So user-generated content is what Clay Shirky calls a group phenomenon now. And he quickly adds, and an amateur one, as you mentioned. So it's really amateur hour, you know, as we all get to contribute. And that makes it noisy on the internet. And that makes it difficult, I think, for the message that our churches and schools want to put out on the internet, because there's so much stuff out there.
That's right. We need to have a clear communication plan, and we need to be able to rise above the noise. We need to do things well. We need to do things consistently so that our message gets heard.
Mm-hmm. And that's a struggle, and I think that's a strategy, if you want to call it that every church or school needs to think through very systematically, saying, how do we want to represent ourselves on the internet? And not only how, but how often, and how best, you know, do we do that? And that's where it gets really confusing. So the question would always be, or many of the questions are, do we, you know, is our church, or am I represented on Facebook or MySpace or LinkedIn or any of the social networks that we're talking about? And is there value? Is there value in that? And what's the tone? What's the tonality of our presence there? There's a bunch of quotes that we could pull out of this chapter. One is really not from Clay Shirky, but he quotes from Merlin Mann, who's a software usability expert and frequenter of different podcasts. And let me just read his quote here, and I think there's some things that we can talk about related to his view on email in particular, which was kind of the beginning of the social nature of the internet. Mm-hmm. He says, email is such a funny thing. People hand you these single little messages that are no heavier than a river pebble. But it doesn't take long until you have acquired a pile of pebbles that's taller than you and heavier than you could ever hope to move, even if you wanted to do it over a few dozen trips. But for the person who took the time to hand you their pebble, it seems outrageous that you can't handle that one tiny thing. What pile? It's just a pebble. I think that's interesting, because that's, I think, everybody can relate to. Anybody who's got more than just a couple emails in their inbox can relate to this.
Oh, I certainly can. I'm thinking about my long weekends. I only work part-time for the Synod, so I sign off of work on Thursdays at noontime and don't sign back in until Monday. And my pile of pebbles is is way taller than me by Monday morning. It takes me half the day just to get through, you know, just the email conversations that have been sent my direction. And it's very hard to ignore someone. You know, uh-huh. It's our tendency to want to take care of things. And I would assume, I'm sure, that as pastors and teachers, we feel that responsibility even heavier. You know, who's going to pick somebody to ignore, you know, in a ministry situation. And I remember my husband going through training, and this was probably 6-8 years ago, that one of his professors gave him the advice, ignore all things equally, meaning you've got to have a balance between your pastoral duties and your family duties and your personal time, you know, so that you're not just totally sinking yourself into the pastoral side of your life and ignoring things completely that shouldn't be ignored. And that was without all of this addition of internet communication that, you know, has so influenced our lives these days. So I think it's got to be a real struggle for pastors and teachers to keep up with those pebbles that are coming their direction.
And then you throw in the maybe the desire or sometimes even the need to be on social networks to connect with other people, which is expanding maybe not your circle of friends, but what I would call your circle of acquaintances. So we now have more acquaintances than we ever had before. You and I, Sally, talk about our Wells Tech podcast acquaintances, people we've never met, but we interface with, and now we get emails on, and we see Facebook posts, and you know that circle, that the number of pebbles just grows and grows, and you have to figure out, you know, where am I going to spend my time? Where does God want me to focus? And that's a, I think that's a constant struggle that is really hard to figure out, because you could pick up all of those pebbles and treat them all equally and spend as much time, you know, on one as the next, and you would not have anything done by the end of the day.
For sure. You know, I think that's what Clay's, he's not giving us a real solution to
right.
this in this chapter, but he's pointing this out to us, that we're kind of in this all-out stage of, you know, everything coming at us, and we haven't figured out all these filtering mechanisms yet, and we need to. Mm-hmm. We need to get to a comfort level where we have some filters in place, where we aren't, you know, feeling the responsibility to respond to every single, you know, Facebook friend request that comes across our inbox, you know, at the moment it does, or whatever mm-hmm. it is. And it's going to take some time. We're in that flux adjustment period, and but we need to keep that focus on our ministry, and keep that as our primary, you know, goal, mm-hmm. How best to reach out with the Word of God to those that need to hear it. And
yep.
It's just a challenge.
Yep. Near the end of the chapter, Clay begins to talk about every web page being what he calls a latent community. And he suggests that very rarely do these latent communities actually become true communities where people get together and connect, because they're really set, the people in the community, even a church website or the people within a congregation, are separated by interest. People have different interests, and they're separated by what he calls time. But what he's seeing as a phenomenon on the internet is a lot of the growing communities are all around how do they do that communities, or how do they do that groups. We see that on Flickr, for instance, where you get groups around photography, and we're going to talk in our interview with Lori Ashbrenner, who is a photographer, and talks a little bit about some of these communities that have grown up on the internet, about how to take better pictures, for instance. And you can think of some of these communities springing up in your church as well, these how-to communities. And I think there's maybe something to be learned. We've seen that here on the Wells Tech podcast, the wiki page that we've built. How do we think about media? How do you set up a sound system? How do you, you know, pick the right church management software, et cetera, et cetera? And you mentioned it at the top of the show, Sally, a lot of the conversations on the Wells Tech listserv are all about how-tos, right?
That's right. So we're learning from each other. We definitely have a sense of community. We enjoy connecting with other ministry tech geeks that are out there in the Wells world doing exciting things in their congregation, learning from their experiences. So definitely a community feel there. And you know, maybe in your congregation you need to pick and choose what those communities are that you really nurture and hope to grow. But definitely lots of potential there with the tools that are available on the web these days.
Mm-hmm. One of the final quotes that I'll share from the book is, he says, We're living in the middle of the largest increase in expressive capability in the history of the human race. I found that really interesting, and as a caution, maybe to all Christians, is the internet can become very narcissistic. You know, when you have blogs and you can post your own photos and you can Twitter, all of those things focus on the me, on the I. But as God's children, I think that has to be obviously cautioned and maybe couched a little bit differently, where when people look at us, what do they see? They don't really see us. Obviously, they see Christ in us. And that's really the point of perhaps using these tools and figuring out how to share our faith or what God has done for us through them. There are lots of opportunities.
Very exciting stuff, and very much an area where we need to learn more and improve, you know, our skills. And
yep, be aware, and keep thinking, praying too, about it. For
definitely.
Sure. I mentioned our interview with Lori Ashbrenner. She was good enough to spend some time with us and talk about digital photography. That's an area that I think a lot of our listeners are interested in and I think struggle with. I know I'm one of those that really struggles to take a good picture. Yet we really need to get a little bit better at that, especially as it comes to creating our websites and creating some visual interest and creating that immersive experience that we've talked about in the past. When we talked last week, I think, about the five don'ts. You don't want that visitor to leave without that immersive experience, understanding who you are, what your congregation is about. And one way to do that is with great photos. And Lori sat down with us and talked about how she takes photos and some advice for budding photographers. Let's listen to our conversation with Lori. Joining us today, we are pleased to have Lori Ashbrenner with us from Oak Harbor, Washington, a member of our church out there and a digital photographer. Thanks for joining us, Lori.
Thank you for having me.
Very good to have you. And you got up early in the morning to speak with us, so we appreciate and laud your dedication and your willingness to be on the show. We wanted to talk a little bit about photography. We've been, Sally and I, for a number of months have been talking back and forth about, boy, we really need to start talking more about digital photography. A lot of our churches and schools struggle with that, and we thought, boy, it would be great to get Lori on because we've seen some of your work. Just beautiful work, Lori.
Well, thank you.
Tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into photography in the first place.
Well, like a lot of portrait photographers, I'm a mom who wanted to document her children's life.
Uh-huh.
And I started getting frustrated with the camera that I had. My husband bought me a new camera that had all the fancy controls on it, and I decided that I needed to learn how to actually use it. And that's kind of how it started, and it just kind of skyballed from there.
Uh-huh. How long ago was that you got interested?
Well, it's been 5 years since I started taking lessons and learning and taking courses.
I was just going to say, you actually operate a business as well. So you do photography for other people outside your family as well.
Yes. I started that about 3 years ago.
But that's a quick turnaround. So it really wasn't that long ago that you were a novice, I guess. Maybe you were, you know, a photographer with what you had, with the tools that you had. But as far as, you know, the higher end or the prosumer type level photography tools, that's something still relatively new to you.
Yeah. Well, with the advance of the digital age, it really does not take long to learn if you have a mind to do it.
Uh-huh. What was
you have instant feedback?
Mm-hmm. What was hardest for you when you first started to learn photography?
The hardest thing was, well, I guess learning the actual controls, what an aperture was, what shutter speed was, how they relate it to one another. I mean, everyone gets lucky with a camera every once in a while and takes a good picture, but to get it consistent was probably the biggest challenge.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's definitely that characterizes my photography skills, getting lucky once in a while. That once in a while, unfortunately, hasn't come too often. So I've got to take. And one of the neat things about digital photography is you can just take a ton of pictures now, and it doesn't cost you anything.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
So what about the back end of that? Do you also did you also learn software to do image tweaking on the back end after you've taken your pictures?
Well, unfortunately, you have to do that anymore. At least with the digital SLRs, if you take your picture in RAW, which is a digital negative, mm-hmm. you really have to learn how to use Photoshop or something else, which is your darkroom now.
Okay. And so there's probably a bit of a learning curve with that as well. As much time as you invested in the camera, you probably also invested time in learning the software aspects as well.
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
So what kind of photos do you take in your business? Do you have a specialty?
My specialty is children. Mm-hmm. But I've taken everything from weddings to military retirements, fundraisers, but I definitely specialize in children and families.
Uh-huh. And do you have a marketing approach? Is it all word of mouth? How did you turn this into a business?
It all started word of mouth, taking pictures of friends, and then their friends showed pictures to friends, and eventually have these friends of friends of friends asking you to take their pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never really, besides my website, I have never really marketed further than that.
Okay. And your website address is so that our listeners can see your work. I assume your work is on your website, right?
Yes. It's www.momentsintimebylori.com.
Momentsintimebylori.com. Yeah, and I was there a couple days ago and just took a look at a couple of them, and I don't know if you have all of your work there, but just beautiful shots. Things that you do with light are, and that's where I struggle, you know, the shadows and getting the right exposure and the composition is really, that's really the art side. I suppose now with digital photography, it's science and art. It's left brain, right brain, and you got to marry the two to really come up with a good photo. And I think that's where a lot of our listeners might struggle too, is they're thinking about taking pictures for their school or their church and getting those posted on the website. So there's probably a lot of budding photographers out there who maybe have the nicer cameras but aren't quite sure, maybe the position that you were in 3 or 4 years ago, what to do with them. So as you would counsel somebody like that, you know, somebody just wanting to get a little bit more serious about photography, so maybe they've got that digital SLR with a few lenses, what kind of advice would you give somebody who wants to get a little bit more serious about things?
I would tell them to read their camera manual.
Okay. read the directions. Okay.
Yeah. It's kind of basic, but there's a book called Understanding Exposure by Brian Peterson that explains all those little controls on your camera better than anything else I've found out there.
Mm-hmm.
Which really makes a difference.
Right.
I would suggest that they carry their camera with them and use it a lot.
Okay. Practice.
Yeah. Practice. And if possible, have somebody who could give them constructive criticism,
mm-hmm.
when they show their pictures to them, and then to learn from that, to actually not get defensive and upset, but go, okay, well, yeah, I can see that the lighting was off on that, or the composition needs to be changed a little.
Mm-hmm. I know. Go ahead, Sally.
Well, I was just going to say, I bet we were thinking the same thing. I've seen websites that do that, where you can submit your photos and get feedback via the web. Mm-hmm. So even if they don't have someone trusted close by that they can bounce ideas off of or show their photos to, that they might find some websites where they can. I've seen them where you have like a theme for the week and you go out and try to photograph a theme and everybody critiques each other's and just different things like that where they can learn and grow in their photography skills that way.
Yeah, there's some wonderful websites out there that do exactly that. And there's also online classes for those who want to take that kind of take that to another step where they give you assignments and then the teacher will critique, but not only the teacher, you'll also have everyone else in the class that submits their ideas of the assignment, and they'll also critique your photos as well.
So for the beginner or the novice who wants to kind of take the next step, equipment-wise, what would you recommend they start out with? Is there a particular camera body or kinds of lenses that would be good for them to start off with? They don't want to maybe go to the, you know, to the professional level yet. You just want to kick the tires a little bit. What would you recommend there?
Well, you can either take two different routes. There's the prosumer camera, which is basically a point-and-shoot camera that's got the auto controls on it, but then they also have the manual settings on it.
Uh-huh. So that would be like the Canon Rebels and those kinds of things you're thinking of? Or less than that?
The Canon G... I think it's a G10 now.
Mm-hmm.
They call them the prosumer cameras. They're usually ranged in the $500 range, somewhere around there.
Now, are those things that you can put different lenses on, or they have a one lens?
Those ones you can't.
Okay, so I think I know what you're. Those are a little bit smaller than the DSLRs, right?
Right.
Okay.
And then there's the route that I would actually recommend because you can outgrow your prosumer camera fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be the digital Rebel, digital SLR, like the Rebel or Nikon's D70 it used to be.
So do you use a Canon or a Nikon?
I use a Canon.
Okay. And you've been pretty happy with that. I suppose a lot, you know, camera bodies are pretty similar, a lot of the feature sets, and maybe the differences in the lenses you buy?
A lot of the differences in the lens that you buy, the difference between my professional Canon 5D and my more entry-level Canon 20D, which, you know, was the entry-level 4 years ago, is that it has my 5D doesn't have any of the automatic settings at all. And the 20D does.
Okay.
20D also has a flash built into it, where the 5D doesn't. You have to have a hot shoe,
right,
an external flash.
Mm-hmm.
The lenses make a big difference, and there's no difference in the lenses between what you can use on the entry level versus the pro.
Mm-hmm.
And they range from, you know, very simple prime lenses to very expensive zooms.
Okay. So just for general, let's say the intermediate photographer, they would probably have a number of lenses. What would be maybe a good first lens? Would it be a zoom type lens or a macro lens, or what would you recommend?
Well, there's good all-around lenses like a 28mm to 135.
Okay.
That's going to give you a good range. If you like to do portraits, I would suggest a 50mm prime.
Okay.
And that's a fairly inexpensive lens, but it gives you really good pictures for portraits.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you want a low light lens, those are where you get expensive.
Okay.
But I found that I started off buying the cheaper lenses, and I quickly realized that I made a mistake, that I should have just saved and invested in the more expensive lenses right away.
Mm-hmm. Makes a difference.
It does.
Okay.
It makes a difference in the capability as far as low light and how much light you can get in where you're talking about those shadows and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You don't use a flash for those, and you really need to be able to be to capture what you want in the lighting that you want.
Right.
So, Lori, I'm guessing that a lot of our listeners don't have the quality of camera that we're talking about here. They're more on the low end of digital cameras because that's what's so prolific out there. But even without, you know, the super high quality cameras, are there some tips you could give our listeners for taking photos, great photos for their church websites? Maybe things to consider or lighting issues or anything like that that would help them with their church websites?
Yeah, with any camera, get in closer. A lot of people have a tendency to take a picture of a person or an object and it doesn't really fill the frame up.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, either zoom in or use your feet to walk in and get closer. Watch the lighting. Bright, sunny days are not good days for pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Even though everyone thinks the light's so great, it's really not. There's harsh shadows and a lot of contrast going on. An outside cloudy day is much better to take pictures than a bright sunny day.
Okay. I've heard prime time. I heard prime time is also sun up and sun down, just dusk and dawn.
Would be the sweet hour, as mm-hmm. most photographers call it.
Okay. How about shooting indoors? A lot of our shots, events at a church, let's say, are indoors. Is there, now, other than the zoom factor getting in closer, you know, obviously a lot of our churches in the fellowship hall or whatever has fluorescent lighting, those kinds of things. How do you best handle those kinds of situations?
Well, the best that you can. Fluorescent lighting gives you all another dimension to your image in giving a color cast to it. So generally you have to use your flash, even though personally that I think that's the worst thing for most pictures.
Mm-hmm.
If you can, the better, you know, window light that you have.
More natural light, right?
Yeah, or natural light mm-hmm. is always better, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
A lot of cameras have, at least the ones that I've had experience with, have the ability to set the white balance so that you can say, hey, I've got a scenario here where I've got fluorescent light, and some of the cameras kind of do a nice job today of compensating for that. Is that right?
Yeah, they do. As long as you know how to change your white balance.
Yeah, it goes back to reading the manual, right?
Right, exactly.
Lori, any good resources that you mentioned the one book on exposure, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes. Any other good websites or books to recommend for, you know, a lot of the amateurs out there who are trying to get some good shots for their church or school?
Yeah, understanding exposure is good for learning your actual camera
mm-hmm.
and all the controls on it, but there's so many websites out there. www.betterphoto.com is one of those that where you can submit your pictures in for free contests, and a lot of people will comment on them and critique them.
Mm-hmm.
I love photography.com is another forum. Then there's the Picture Perfect School of Photography, which is another website.
Okay.
And there's just so many books out there that are really good. You know, just go to the library and do a search on photography, and you'll come up with some really good books.
Yeah, that's one of the wonders of the web today, is there's just a ton of resources out there, especially I've found in the world of digital photography. Just a lot of people want to figure out how to take better pictures, and the web is great at publishing and communicating different ideas and different ways to do that. Lori, that's wonderful. Thank you again for taking the time to spend with us. We understand that you're taking some time off from photography because you're going to have a baby.
Yes.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Blessings on that. Blessings on your continued work and your work there for the church. And Enjoy the rest of your day.
Well, thank you, Martin. Okay. You have a good day, too.
Okay, Lori. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Sally, I think one of the challenges that I have when I'm taking a digital photograph is figuring out how best to frame a shot, and then it kind of steamrolls into, well, I got to think about lighting, and then I have to think about the f-stop and the ISO setting, and my camera is just got too much stuff for me to think about. And I think there are some great resources that Lori recommended that will maybe make sense of all that and kind of simplify it, hopefully, and hopefully take good shots.
You know, I'm just a point-and-click kind of girl.
Uh-huh.
Lori inspired me. I looked at some of her photos on her website.
Oh, aren't they beautiful?
They are just really impressive. And, you know, it's really just an amazing world. We just have to take a step back and be in awe of the fact that we can have these kind of tools at our disposal and the ability to learn online and share with other people, and just an effect of technology right there. Just really impressive and inspired me. Maybe I'll go out and try a few more photos with a few of those extra settings on my camera. Actually, read the book. What a concept.
Right, read the directions. What was neat about our conversation with Lori and kind of inspirational to me was that she's really picked up this digital stuff just in the last 3 or 4 years. And to get to the point of the pictures that she's taking gives, I think, hope to us all.
There you go.
Lori, thank you again for taking the time with us, and blessings on your new addition to your family. She's, as she mentioned, she is expecting another child. Wonderful. More subject matter for her photos. I'm sure we'll see some photos of her new baby, too. Up next, our picks of the week. Sally, what's your pick this week?
Well, this week I wanted to point our listeners to a free FTP solution. FTP stands for File Transfer Protocol, and if you're doing any work on websites, you may need to copy files from your local computer over to the internet server that hosts your website. And the FTP client software that I use is called FileZilla. FileZilla can be found at filezilla-project.com, and we'll have a link in the show notes to that. It's basically a really simple drag and drop solution for copying files from one computer, your local computer, to the internet, and it works on Windows, Mac, and Linux. Just a very popular utility, and I did some searching, and we never have talked about FileZilla, or at least it never has been a pick of the week, so I thought it was worth throwing out there as a utility. I use it practically every day, and I think some of our listeners may benefit from having it as well. So there you go.
Wonderful. I've used it many times. It is one of the first things I install when I build a new computer, because you need FTP, and this just really makes it dumb simple. FTP is a faster transfer protocol. Sometimes you'll go to a website and you'll have a choice, you know, HTTP downloads or FTP downloads. FTP downloads are going to be faster, and they have some different capabilities as far as resume and those kinds of things over HTTP. So it's hard to get along without FTP solutions these days, both up and downloads. My pick of the week is called Texter. I've used Texter before, off and on, and just got relinked into it because I had been using a product called Active Words. And Active Words is basically a text, what's called a text expander. You type in some letters and you hit a key combination and it expands into something more. Whatever you've typed in is the text or the script that you want to happen. It's kind of like a macro, but a little bit dumbed down. It doesn't quite do as much of that. But I think upcoming operating systems, I heard that the new Snow Leopard operating system for the Mac is going to come built in with a text expander kind of application. But basically, it's text substitution. So you type in any string, let's say a code. For instance, just let me give you an example of how I use this. I often get a lot of questions about our web hosting program through Final Web. And typically the questions are, can you tell me a little bit more about it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I could type in that, I basically give the same message each time. So it's something that I want to repeat over and over and over again. And I tell them a little bit about the feature set, and then I direct them to the appropriate website. What I've done is put that into Texter as a text block. It's probably a paragraph that I write each time. And I have a little code that are a little bit of a string that I enter into my Outlook. And for my case, it's TX Final Web. And whenever I type in TX Final Web and hit the Tab key, immediately Text Expander leaps into action and replaces my TX Final Web script or text string with that paragraph that I've typed. So it kind of sits in the background and basically expands the text. So I don't have to type in all that. I don't even have to remember what I wrote because it's sitting there in the background. You can do this with email signatures if you have multiple signatures you want to use, all kinds of applications for this. So if there's any repetitive typing that you do, this is a great tool for that. So that's Texter, and we'll put the link in the show notes. It comes from Lifehacker, actually, the good folks at Lifehacker, which is a great blog. If you don't read that, that would be something I would highly recommend as well. I think they created this back in 2007. They've made some minor improvements over the years, but in essence, it does one job, and it does it well. That's Windows only, but there are other applications for different platforms. I know there's something called Text Expander for the Mac. Texter is free, so it doesn't cost you anything to try it out. It works extremely well, so I would suggest you give it a try if you have any kind of repetitive typing, and it really does save keystrokes.
You know, Martin, I have to tell you, I'm sitting here holding back laughter.
Why's that?
Because of something strange that's going through my brain here. But we have been on a Get Smart kick here in my household. I don't know if you remember the old television show. It's from the late 60s. Get
Missed
Smart,
it Max by Walker. That much.
You guys, we got the entire 5 seasons of Get Smart. So, like, unbelievable amount of Get Smart going on at our house. And I can just see Smart with Texter. You know, he would be freaking out over that. You say it just leaps into action for you. You know, I can just imagine what old Maxwell.
That was a great series. The recent movie is terrible, but I don't know if you've seen that, the remake.
I have not seen that, no.
Oh, yeah. Barbara Feldon. And who was the actor who played Maxwell Smart? I don't remember anymore.
Don Adams,
yeah.
Just awesome. Yeah, did you know in the latter years of the episode they got married and had twins?
Is that right?
I never realized that, but 84 and 99 got married and ended up with twin babies. It was
no
just, it's
kidding.
Just hilarious.
Is that true, really?
Great show. No, I mean, not in real life on the television
show. Oh, okay.
That was part of the plot of the TV show. Just hilarious. So.
No kidding.
Anyway.
We're dating ourselves, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Anyway. What's our Wells.net feature, Sally?
I am going to share with you the wonderful work being done by the LWMS. LWMS.org stands for Lutheran Women's Missionary Society, and they have a great website loaded with information. They have daily devotions and prayers there. They have information about mission projects, the Befriend a Mission program, and also information about their rallies and upcoming convention. Springtime is the time where all the circuits of LWMS are hosting rallies. So if you aren't familiar with where your circuit might be meeting this spring, you can certainly check out the website for that information. And also the summer convention is going to be held in Denver, Colorado this summer, June 25th through 28th, and that's always a wonderful convention to attend. I know we had it down in Texas many years ago, and I was able to be one of the hostesses there, and it was just a great experience. So I encourage you to check it out. It's all found at lwms.org.
Beautiful. All right. Well, we're running long as usual. Apologies to our listeners. You can always fast forward, of course. But you probably don't want to fast forward through our listener comments and community feedback because we have a ton of great stuff. And like we mentioned at the top of the show, the listserv just exploded this past week. So we'll try and do a quick recap of all the conversations going on there because I know some of our listeners would be interested in the content there. We're republishing some of that stuff to the wiki, which is, I think, becoming a an even more wonderful resource than when we started. As more content goes in there, boy, I think there's just a lot of good stuff that anybody interested in ministry and technology would be remiss if they didn't visit the wiki and contribute. So what do we
That's
have?
That's right, Mark. Well, I'll just start with all the different listserv topics. The one that we definitely want to get added to the wiki and hope to include a link for that in our show notes today is information on filtering solutions. We've talked before about using OpenDNS, which is a free internet-based filter solution for churches and schools for their website, their web access.
Yeah, web content filtering we're talking about. So filtering
right.
out all the junk that may come up in searches and so on and so forth from your inside your network.
And there was probably, I don't know, 6 or 8 different great messages, different people sharing what they're using for website filtering. And we want to make sure we capture all that great knowledge out on the wiki. So mm-hmm. there'll be a page added specifically to share all that filtering information.
What I liked about the conversation, Sally, what I liked about the conversation was just the different levels of sophistication that you could pick from. I mean, you can go very basic with OpenDNS if that meets your needs. So that requires no hardware, software, just a quick change to your router. You could go with a software-only solution that sits on one server or on individual machines, or even some of the suggestions were for physical hardware devices that that you plug into your network and they do all that for you. So I think regardless of what kind of sophistication you need, there's good content there.
Definitely.
Good solutions.
Just a couple of other conversation threads that are happening out on the listserv. There was some discussion about Easy Worship and Media Shout, which mm-hmm. are two, what would you call it, Martin? Like a PowerPoint substitution specifically geared for doing imagery and things in worship services.
Worship presentation software, yeah.
That's what you'd call it. Mm-hmm. Very good. And I say people asked the question and kind of pointed to these as two resources, but there wasn't a lot of response. So I'm not sure if anybody's really using these out in Wells congregations. And if you are, we'd love to hear from you and hear, you know, what kind of success you've had with those. What'd you call them? Worship presentation solutions?
Software, yeah. Or whatever. I don't know if that's the official name. That's what I okay. call it. So that's what we'll
good.
Call it.
There was also a discussion about HymnSoft, which is a mm-hmm. product published by Northwestern Publishing House that churches use for, in substitution of having a live organist, they're able to play the hymns from our Christian worship hymnal with HymnSoft software. And just a discussion about the potential for updates coming from NPH, and also some questions around the supplement that was published last summer and the electronic resources that came in relation to the Christian Worship Supplement. So check out that thread if you're interested in more details on using HymnSoft in your congregation.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally on the listserv, there was a discussion about mass email. And this is something you and I have talked about several times on the show, Martin. And still, new ideas keep coming in. The I think it was Steve Mathwig asked the question out on the listserv, and we heard from Michael Plucker at St. Paul's in New Ulm, who's using PHP List. Cindy Krieger at Shepherd of the Hills in Lansing, Michigan, is using LSoft listserv. And then Pastor Nathan Erickson from Oshkosh, Wisconsin, is using verticalresponse.com, which is free for nonprofits. And mm-hmm. he gave some details about how to qualify for that free status with Vertical Response. So great ideas to add to the slew of mass email products we've talked about before. And if you're using something else, we'd love to hear about that as well.
Yep, beautiful. Lots of great information. Okay, going on, we've got still more feedback.
Yeah, we heard from Ben Paulson on mm-hmm. the Wells Tech website. He left us a comment, Martin, and actually kind of a challenge for you, I think.
Sure.
Last week we talked about
we love a good challenge here on the Wells Tech
there
podcast.
And we talked about separating member information from visitor information, basically having even a separate site for your members to go to for some specific information for members. Mm-hmm. And Ben was asking how to do that without looking like you're hiding something. And he wondered if you had any examples of churches that were doing that well.
Yep. This comes up typically when I present workshops on evangelistic websites, And one of the first sites that I take people to is actually one of our Wells congregations in Alaska, shepherdofthehills.com, with a dash in between all those words. The reason I like their site, and I don't know if this would classify as not hiding it, because there's a login, you know, in the left-hand navigation, which takes them to the behind-the-scenes stuff for membership. And I know at some point in the past they were using Member Connect, which is one of our software partners from Concordia Technology Solutions. I don't know if they're still using them or not. But their homepage is very visitor-focused. Basically, they have devotional material. They have it in PDF form. They have it in podcast. They have live video services. In essence, their news, their podcasts, their feeds, all the content on their site is visitor-focused, not necessarily member-focused, although members could get a lot out of it if they went to their site. So that would be, I think, a good example of what I was talking about with separating internal and external communications. I'll come up with more over time as they come across my desk, but that's a great example of how to really be visitor-focused and still provide a link into, you know, kind of the behind-the-scenes insider information. So there are others, but I think that's a great start. So shepherdofthehills.com, great job, you guys, up there in the north, northern climes of the Synod. So.
Yeah. Definitely. All right, next up, we had a couple of comments from John Shoesmith, who's out at Redeemer in Yakima. He wrote to thank us for the link to Pixlr. Pixlr is one of the online image editors that we talked about in last week's show. We actually had a link to a review of a bunch of them, and Martin, I think you said you were using Pixlr for some pretty advanced image editing. You can mm-hmm. do layers and things like that. John said that it would be useful for adding scripture to backgrounds for Bible class and videos, so there's a great example of how to use Pixlr to enhance your images, including some Bible verses in them and things like that. So thanks for that, John.
I would think these online tools are best for either web pictures or web photos or PowerPoint types of things. Not as good, I don't think, for if you're doing any kind of print work, because that needs to be a much higher resolution. So some of the online services aren't going to do as good a job there. But if you're looking for just web stuff or presentation stuff, I think or worship presentation, whatever, I think these are great tools. So Pixlr is one of the good ones because it really emulates, if you're familiar with Photoshop at all, it does many of the same things Photoshop does at no cost.
Love the price tag. Mm-hmm. There you go. John also emailed us to let us know that he had received notice through a blog post, I believe, that Google Video is going to be shutting down. They're going to concentrate their efforts on YouTube because Google bought YouTube. And so Google Video is the platform where John has developed the closed caption sermons for a couple of reasons. They support closed captioning, and also they support longer video. So you aren't cut off at a 10-minute time limit with the videos that you post on Google Video. So they said they'll leave the videos up that are there, but they're not going to continue to allow people to upload videos over the next several months. They'll be shutting that part of the service down.
Well, that'll be interesting to watch, because I don't think that they can reduce functionality. So YouTube must just be consolidating where they're going to allow those longer videos to appear on YouTube. Because I don't think they want to shut out that segment, because 10 minutes is not very long.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what develops.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A little conversation over on the Twitter feed for Pound Wells Tech. Remember that if you Twitter Pound Wells Tech, that'll go into our feed, so that's a way that we can carry on a conversation via Twitter. And over there we heard from Rachel, who was listening and has ideas for her church website at trinitywells.com. So I guess our conversation last week on the five don'ts reached a few ears, so that's encouraging to hear from Rachel in that way. We also had some feedback from David Savatsky, who actually works in our Wells World Mission Promotion Office, and he pointed out...
He sent us a voicemail.
Yep, we actually had some Twitter conversation from him, too. He sent us a link to VoodooPad, which is a way to organize your notes and things.
Mm-hmm.
And also he said that his church was going to be getting the evangelism DVD that we talked about. in last week's show.
Right.
So lots of activity from David, and maybe time to play that voicemail from him as well.
Okay, let me cue it up here.
Hey, Martin and Sally. This is Dave Savatsky from upstairs. Well, I suppose not for Sally, but you get what I mean. I was wondering if you had any advice on getting your congregation more used to communicating digitally, whether it's maybe holding a class or something like that, or like a workshop or two for technology and like internet use, that sort of thing. In the last couple podcasts I heard, sounded kind of like that's sort of a normal thing for, at least for Sally. So just trying to maybe use it as an outreach tool potentially. Also kicking around the idea of having it be completely internal as well, like trying to get people used to using the website more. And I thought that maybe they didn't know how. Also, I've noticed that our e-newsletter only gets opened by half the people. That could be on our end, but I tend to think that they might just be blocking it, or it might be ending up in their junk mail filter and that sort of thing. And I'm not really sure they would know how to check it. So just some thoughts. Any advice would be appreciated. Martin and Sally, you guys know definitely how to reach me. Otherwise, any advice on the next podcast, that'd be cool. So thanks much.
Thank you, Dave. And just to clarify for all of our listeners, he is upstairs here in the Senate office. He's not living in the loft at the Sally Draper home.
Thankfully, yeah.
So what about getting our congregations a little bit more digital? That obviously saves some money, but there's also some efficiencies there as far as the speed of communication, too.
Right. I think the number one thing is that you have to teach them to look there, mm-hmm. and probably the easiest way to do that is via your regular standard print communication. So
Right. Having
a blurb about the website in your bulletin each week that says what's new on the web or whatever, so that they're reminded to go there and look for things on a regular basis. In our school newsletter each week, at least during the wintertime, we say, in case of bad weather, check our website. You know, so we're constantly reinforcing that that's our communication mechanism where they can get the most up-to-date information.
Mm-hmm.
And in that regard, then you have to be consistent with whatever you decide to put on your website. You know, it may take a long time for people to get it, that they can find the calendar or the announcements and things that you want them to get via the website. But if you aren't doing it consistently and they go there once and don't find it, then they're not likely to come back.
Yep.
So whatever you adopt to do, do it on a very consistent basis. David mentioned offering classes, and certainly you could put your efforts into that kind of thing. You know, come on Tuesday night if you want to learn more about how to navigate our website. I'm guessing that you aren't going to reach that many people that are willing to actually take the time to come to a class.
Mm-hmm.
But if you feel like you need to give them that kind of coaching, maybe a great alternative would be to post some quick video tutorials, you know, and they can do it anytime and as many times as they want. They can watch you walk them through a website tour or show them how to subscribe to an email newsletter or any of that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's lots of options there, and certainly offering classes is one of those.
I've got a couple suggestions. One, resist the urge to attach, let's say, your electronic newsletter to your email. Put a link, obviously put it on your website, then put a link to it in an email, and then have them go out to the website. So you're getting them used to going to the website rather than just opening up attachments in their email. I think that would be one. Another one thing that we've done at our church is we've taken time after church to actually give a quick tour of the website. So we'll actually hook it up to the projector. Now, you need an internet connection, obviously, to do this. Or you can do screenshots, I suppose, too. But just give them a quick tour of what's all available. So in place of the announcements after church or during the announcements after church, you're basically showing them the website. So you're marketing it that way. And Dave also asked about how to get past some of the spam filters that are out there. And I think that's an age-old challenge. I think one piece of advice that I would offer to any church is make sure you're avoiding spam-type words. These engines typically look for words that may trap your email. One word that comes to mind is the use of the word free. Try to avoid the use of the word free in your subject header, in your subject line, because that'll typically get trapped each time. So just carefully look at words that may be spam. I think there's websites that will actually show you what those words are. Maybe we can dig those up for next show. But those would be some pieces of advice I could offer you, Dave. Thanks for the voicemail. Appreciate it.
Great stuff.
Next. Is there more? Or is that it?
Nope. I think we exhausted our list of community
I'm tired.
Feedback. We could go on and on, but that's all.
We don't want the comments to stop coming in, so please continue to contribute. And we mentioned the listserv. You can find out more about the listserv just by going to our website, wellstech.wells.net, and down in the bottom right column someplace there is the feed to the listserv and a link to get engaged with that. So take advantage of that.
Definitely.
Oh, I'm tired, Sally. Next week, I am excited about next week because we're going to talk about something that I deal with day in and day out. It's a technology called PDF from our good friends at Adobe. We talk a lot about PDFs. All of us use PDFs, I think, in one way, shape, or form. We often encourage our congregations and schools to consider using PDF on their websites rather than any other format because of its portability. We're going to explore the depths of PDF. Editing, converting, optimizing, merging, some of the tools out there like Foxit, some of the free tools, some of the gotchas when using PDF. There's all things PDF next week. So if you're interested in PDFs, tune in next week. Even if you're not, I think there'll be something that you can take away. And we're lining up another interview as well. Hopefully we will have Patty Ellsberger from Lenovo, one of our recent ShopWells vendors, coming on board talking about some of the bargains there and some of the reasons why you may want to consider a Lenovo laptop or desktop unit. That's the old IBM. That's their new line, and I've had a lot of Lenovos over the years, or the ThinkPad models. Those laptops really are just made to last, and that's a good thing when you're talking about school technology. So Patty will be joining us next week. Anything in closing, Sally? Are you tired too?
No, I'm just looking forward to that interview. We have a computer lab full of Lenovos over at St. John's, so we're real happy with them. So good. That's a great vendor.
All right. All right, let's close our show as we always do with the music of one of our very talented Wells artists, Wendy Sue Fleege, her song Weary, speaking of being tired, but this in the Christian sense, from her album Everyday Christian. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Here I am again, broken into a million pieces, trying to make myself a in all the wrong places. Please take away my apathy, take away me, fill me up with all you are, replace my broken heart. 'Cause I'm weary, I'm dead in this desert, I'm searching for peace. For this trial that is drawing me closer to you.